Yes, indeed. Power to the people. Good afternoon to you. Thanks for being here at WTIC. Todd Feinberg, my name, in case you're new to the station. Thank you for being here. Well, thank you to everybody for being here, but that's who I am. Oh, the world is going crazy, and everybody's doing their best to push it that way, it seems. Before the New York Post, this is a story in the Post, before the New York Post broke the news of Jeffrey Epstein's death, it was posted to online message board 4chan, prompting the fire department of New York to probe whether one of its paramedics leaked the details. The user made a series of six posts beginning at 8:16 a.m. Saturday, around 40 minutes before the news of the convicted pedophile's death broke. Don't ask me how I know, but Epstein died an hour ago from hanging, cardiac arrest. Screen cap this. The first post reads, the messages included unconfirmed details about the aid that first responders provided. That's one little aspect of how the world is different today, I think, that you just can't, I don't know, nothing's done properly. Then there's this from the New York Times. One of the two people guarding Jeffrey Epstein when he apparently hanged himself in a federal jail cell was not a full-fledged correctional officer, and neither guard had checked on Mr. Epstein for several hours before he was discovered, prison and law enforcement officials said. Those details emerged Monday night as Attorney General Bill Barr sharply criticized the management of the federal jail in Manhattan, where Epstein, who was accused of sexually abusing dozens of girls, was found dead Saturday morning. Bill Barr, I made this point yesterday, I just want to reiterate it. Bill Barr is in charge of that prison. It's a federal prison. Bill Barr is the Attorney General of the United States of America. When he's criticizing the management of that prison, he's criticizing himself. Again, what orders did he give regarding the kind of treatment that Epstein should have received? And what's this about? What's this about a prison guard who is not a prison guard? One of the two people guarding Jeffrey Epstein was not a full-fledged correctional officer. It's like a joke. No correctional officer had checked Epstein for several hours before he was found, even though guards were supposed to look in on prisoners in the protective unit where he was housed every 30 minutes. In addition, only one of the two people guarding the special housing unit, known as 9 South, normally worked as a correctional officer, according to three prison officials with knowledge of the case who spoke to the New York Times. The officials did not say what sort of job the other employee usually worked. A New York Times investigation published last year detailed this practice under which federal prisons are so strapped for correctional officers that they regularly compel teachers, nurses, secretaries, and other support staff members to step in. The practice has grown at some prisons as the Trump administration has curtailed the hiring of correctional officers. Many of these staff members only receive a few weeks training in correctional work, and while required by contract to serve as substitutes, are often uncomfortable in those roles. Even workers who previously held correctional positions have said that the practice was unsettling because fewer colleagues were on hand to provide backup if things turned ugly. It's bizarre. Government is bizarre. Government is a mess. Government is dangerous. That's what this story proves. I want to move on to another story. If you want to say something about Epstein, you're welcome. It's a topic, but I don't want to belabor it. Tell me if you have any problem with this. Is there anything wrong in your mind with people in the country, people migrating to America, legal, illegal, whatever, is there any problem in your mind with those people not being eligible for benefits? I guess we could turn it around. Are you shocked to think that your government would give benefits to people coming into the country looking to migrate? And think about legal people. Think about people who love America, want to be here. They go through the legal process. They're coming in. They want to get a green card. And the Trump administration wants to use neediness against them. It wants to give a preference to people who can support themselves. I would like to discuss this with you. Do you have any problem with this? Do you have any problem with requiring or giving preference to people coming into the country? Give preference to those who have a way to support themselves. This is the new declared policy of the Trump administration. This is Ken Cuccinelli, the acting director of the U.S. Citizenship and Immigration Services.
Would you also agree that Emma Lazarus's words etched on the Statue of Liberty, "Give me your tired, your poor," are also part of the American ethos?
They certainly are. Give me your tired and your poor who can stand on their own two feet and who will not become a public charge.
Cuccinelli says that America has, through much of its history, used this test. We don't want people coming into the country who are going to be a public charge, who are going to cost us money. Is there anything wrong, please, with making a rule that says we're going to give preference to those who are ready to run, ready to be a part of our society, ready to support themselves, who come in speaking the language, maybe, capable of getting a job, ready to contribute to the society? I think we went astray severely. Years ago, 65, with immigration reform and creating a system that tries to bring people in who put the biggest burden possible on our society, rather than protecting us from people who are going to be a burden. 860-522-9842. That's my question for you. This is Ken Cuccinelli once again, acting director of the U.S. Citizenship and Immigration Services.
They certainly are. Give me your tired and your poor who can stand on their own two feet and who will not become a public charge.
There you go. Simple enough. Anything wrong with that? I don't think so. I like that. Sean, what do you think?
Oh, this is the opportunity of a lifetime for Republicans. I'm not sure whether or not they'll blow it or not. The Democrats have created them as being the party against the American working person, and it's outrageous. There's no excuse for anyone to come to America who cannot be self-sufficient, because the end game in that is unaffordable, and it's going to bankrupt the country and create two classes, a very small political class and the rest of us schleps.
Well, the other part of this, though, Sean, would be, what if we can afford it? What if we had the unlimited amount of money? It was no big deal to us financially. No. Why would we want to do anything but bring in the people who are going to contribute the most to the society?
I'm not quite sure I understood your question. Are you saying being against this or for it?
Why wouldn't we want to sculpt the group of people who we let in each year as new immigrants to the country into a group that is primed to fit in and contribute right off the bat?
That's the group we want here, because otherwise you have complete anarchy.
Well, I don't know if you have complete anarchy. You certainly make it more expensive to run cities and educate people if you're bringing in people who don't speak English, who speak 100 different languages, who aren't familiar with what modern civilization is like because they're coming from such primitive places. Why would we do that?
We would do it to destroy the country, which is what the left wants to do. But we've created an environment now where it's next to impossible to better yourself from a lower working class environment to a more middle class environment. Every day it's getting harder and harder. And when we keep sucking resources out to people who are not contributing, it's taking more and more opportunity away from that Joe the plumber or Mike the mechanic. And at some point, there's going to be nothing left, and we're just going to have communism, because that's all that there is. There's like what's in Venezuela, where a few people have all the wealth and everyone else is eating out of garbage cans.
Sean, thank you for the call. Good to hear from you. 860-522-9842. We'll take more calls right after this on WTIC. If they don't have, this is a quote from Ken Cuccinelli, if they don't have future prospects of being legal permanent residents without welfare, that will be counted against them. All immigrants who can stand on their own two feet, self-sufficient, pull themselves up by their bootstraps would be welcomed, he said. This is rational immigration policy, but is there something hateful about it? Is there something inappropriate? Are we abandoning our role in the world in some way? What's your interpretation of this? Rogers, Middletown. Hello, sir.
This is Rogers?
I don't know. Is it Rogers? This is tough.
I didn't hear it. It squeaked. Just for the record, I'm not 100 years old, and I don't remember Ellis Island, but I can tell you that I was born in Munich, Germany, to a military father who married a displaced person from Latvia who ended up in Germany. And
okay, make your point, Rogers.
My father's father sponsored my whole mother's family over here. They could not come over to the United States unless they were sponsored and not be a detriment to the society. And they did that. And they came over here and became working people and are very successful. We don't need more people to
be dependent, yes.
To be dependent on us.
I like that old system that you're describing, Rogers, where it was expected that people would be... Go ahead.
Just for the record, it's still in effect, and all Cuccinelli is doing is putting it back in effect. It has been in effect for a long time, and then Obama stopped it.
Rogers, thank you for the call. 860-522-9842. This is rational, it seems to me. We are not, some people will say, oh, we didn't used to do, oh, we used to be more, oh, how about what it says on the Statue of Liberty? But this is America now. This is America today. I'm sure there were times where we let millions of people pour into the country and had very low standards about whether they got to stay. This is America now. We have to do what's best for this country now. How is it best for this country now to accept millions of people who are a burden on our cities in particular? Don in East Hartford. Hi, Don.
Hi. Good afternoon, Mr. Feinberg. So I'm trying to get you straight. Back in the day when my grandparents and granduncles used to come to America from the islands to work, do the farm work and the domestic work and all of that stuff and the factory work that nobody wanted to do, it was okay for immigrants to come. But now that America is big and mighty and powerful, and they don't think they need immigrants anymore, that's the biggest mistake they're making.
I disagree. I think we need immigrants badly.
Okay, but certain type of immigrants, only those who are coming from developed countries.
Well, no, not necessarily, but the crux, what's wrong with accepting the people who are best for us? Why should we not do that?
How would you determine that?
Well, let's say, for example, in Connecticut, I believe there are a large number of jobs that go unfilled that require educated people for engineering jobs. Why shouldn't we go to the marketplace of the world, because people from all over the world want to come here, and pluck ourselves some people capable of filling those jobs? That will make our economy grow. Wouldn't that be a good idea?
Can I give you an example, Mr. Feinberg?
Well, can you respond to my point first?
Yes, I'm going to respond.
Okay, go ahead.
I came here with my daughter when she was 3 years old. Today mm-hmm. she has two masters and starts her own business. And she has no intention of going back to Jamaica to live.
Okay.
She's her safest as America. She's married with her daughter and doing well. Like I said, she used to work for corporate America. No, she's working for her own. And it's benefiting America.
Okay, so your daughter came here with you as a child, and she has two master's degrees, is a productive member of society. And what's the question?
So the point is, so why can't we allow people to come here and better themselves and in turn contribute to the great USA?
Well, that's exactly what we want to do. And we want to pick people, I think, who are most likely to end up in that situation.
One last thing before I go. The truth is, Mr. Feinberg, is that America don't want to speak the truth. It's not about political parties choosing political parties. It's about racial identity. That's what is going on right now. People are scared of losing their racial identity. Everybody's trying to sweep it under the rug like it's not true, but we know it's true.
Well, I don't think it's racial identity specifically. I think it's cultural identity, that there is, and political scientists and sociologists know this, that when there is a pace of change with immigration that goes too fast, that all societies have trouble coping with that. And I believe it makes sense for us to be realistic in terms of making sure that we have people coming in from other countries who can assimilate at a rate that's manageable for us. And there are countries around the world that have had tough times dealing culturally with the speed with which there are new groups of people taking over the country.
I agree with that, Mr. Feinberg.
Okay.
It seems like it's only one type of people this system is fighting against, brown people and black people.
No, well, I don't think there's any evidence of that.
Okay.
You know, so Jamaicans, if I were making the list, I love Jamaicans. I think Jamaicans are beautiful people who have great character. I'd love to see them high on the list in the country. I don't personally care about race at all, but I do care about cultural cohesiveness, and I don't want to be like Germany, where Angela Merkel got basically thrown out of power because she said she wanted to take in a couple of million Syrians during the Great Exodus there. That was political suicide for her because nobody wants to deal with that level of change in their country. That's just tough, Don. Don't you agree?
I agree. But
don't fall for everything being racial. That is the con that the Democrats are pushing.
I need the president to stop spewing racial garbage every day. He gets up, he tweets racial garbage. Then he stop that. If he can stop that, that's the only problem I have with him.
All right,
racial stuff that he's spewing on Twitter every day, dividing the country and putting fear in people.
Don, thank you for the call. Good to hear from you. 860-522-9842. We'll talk more about this coming up on WTIC.
It takes a revolution to make a solution.
WTIC, I just want to play something for Don. Don, I want to say this, too. You have to understand how much I appreciate your call and having the input coming from you with your perspective as an immigrant. And I just want you to understand that I believe the insidiousness in our politics, that the racism in our politics is not coming from the right. It's coming from the left. The left is obsessed with race, talks about it constantly, promotes it, needs there to be racial division to satisfy its business model. And I want to play you a quote from Cory Booker before we take some more calls, the New Jersey senator who's running for president. Listen to what he says.
Decades of living in a community where you see how deeply unfair this nation is still to so many people.
Unfair to so many people. What is he talking about? This nation being unfair to people
who struggle, who work hard, who do everything right but still find themselves disproportionately with lead in their water, superfunds in their neighborhood, schools that don't serve their genius, healthcare disparities that still affect their body and their well-being. We as a nation must address these persistent inequalities, or we will never fully achieve the strength and the possibility. Hope is the active conviction that despair will not have the last word.
All right, that's Cory Booker. What I hear him doing here is talking about providing guaranteed outcomes to people. And the Democrats' business model, it seems to me, is to pack the country with as many dependent people as possible on purpose because of the inherent racial motivation in their politics, so that they can then be the providers to those people and have guaranteed votes. I believe that this is all an election rigging scheme. There is no part of the American system that was intended to be a guarantee that you'll have health care that's as good as somebody else's, that you'll have housing that is as good as somebody else's, that you'll have any product as good as somebody else's. Outcomes are up to us to pursue. The government is supposed to provide education. Education is the key to being able to advance. Because Democrats run cities in such a way as to make it very, very difficult to advance because of the violence, because of the poor schools, because of the lack of economic opportunity. Look at the places that Democrats operate on and tell me why you don't look at them and say, these racists, they're the ones who are trying to keep minorities down. Now, given that Cory Booker is saying our systems are not functioning well enough for the people who are poor, or the people who come in not speaking English, or the people who, God forbid, have to live in the areas run by the Democrats, why would you want to bring more people into the country who are not prepared to function in our society? Okay, you say it's the land of opportunity. Everybody should have a right, like you had, Don, so that you could have a daughter who was raised and got a great education, has a great career, and is a great contributor to our society. That is a beautiful story, one that would touch any heart, I think. But what the Democrats have designed is a system of dependency where they're using the poor and the unprepared to be here, and those who don't speak English to overburden the schools so that they can demand more money, and overburden the healthcare system so they can demand more money, and on and on and on to build their business model. I just wanted Don to understand that. 860-522-9842. Let's see who's been waiting the longest here. Matt in Hartford. Hello, Matt.
Hey, how are you?
Don't say that.
Great point, because you just made a lot of my points right there, but I just want to disagree with one thing you just said.
Okay.
You mentioned poor schools. Is it the schools that are poor, or is it the unprepared, is it the parenting that is doing a poor job sending the students to school that are unprepared?
Matt, what is the job of a school? What is the job of a school, Matthew?
Well, the job of the school is to educate the kids, but if the kids aren't even prepared to sit in their chair and they're not even prepared to learn, I mean, that's a parent's job. You know, you can't just send your kid to school and not even read to them at night or teach them how to sit in a chair.
Well, look, we all know that point, and I understand your point. I just look at it the other way around. Here's how I look at it, is Democrats like to point to the suburban schools and talk about, oh, look at public education, what it achieves. Look at how, well, no, that's not education achieving anything. That's the kids you're talking about, Matt, going to school prepared and gifted and educated by their parents. Anybody can take those kids and turn out high graded and high performing kids on standardized tests. The challenge of education, the responsibility of education is to take those poor kids, take those kids from the bad homes, which they did perfectly fine 50 years ago. They took inner city kids, they took poor kids, they took kids off the boat, and they turned them into successful people who could contribute to our society. We have lost that ability. Don't you agree?
I agree, and I don't hear one Democrat. All they say is free college. College isn't going to help any
because
of kids.
There is
for college.
Because there's no longer any desire to deliver successful outcomes in our society. Our politics is driven. Thank you, Matt, for the call. Our politics is driven by the desire to have a business model that transfers taxpayer dollars to the voters of the Democratic Party. That's why Connecticut is in crisis. That's why the economic collapse going on right now. Everything is about a transfer of wealth to Democratic voters. Schools are designed to fail today, and they chase false priorities. That's why we can't afford to invite more poor people who don't speak English and aren't prepared to contribute and haven't lived in a functional society before. We can't afford to, because the Democrats have built a business model around having more of them here, and it's crushing our urban areas. Permanent poverty works for them, so they invest in it. We have to say no more permanent poverty. It's too expensive for us right now. Maybe someday we can welcome everybody in once again. But right now, we need people who can contribute and help our economy grow so we can pay off the incredible debts the Democrats have generated for us. 860-522-9842. Jerry's in his truck. Hello there, Jerry.
Hi, how are you? I got five examples. Going to nip this thing right in the butt. Bear with me and listen very carefully. Everybody listen very carefully. In Alaska, you got caribou. And they fly or they run into snowpacks to escape mosquitoes. The mosquitoes are so packed, it's so much, that they can kill a caribou just by drinking the blood. There's your money supply out the door.
Wow.
In Maine, there are moose are dying for the same purpose, but they're ticks. You get a beehive, they got soldiers. You get anywhere near that beehive, there's going to be there's a pay the price. Nature has its way to protect its own, but we people, we have a tendency of letting everybody come in, invade, and rob us blind. How much do you think we can sustain with people coming in this country illegally just to tap onto the mother load?
All right, well, don't say it's
an example and get off the bandwagon.
Don't even use that language then of robbing us blind, because what you've set up is a paradigm of nature that I think is very valuable. What you're saying is the natural order of things is
exactly
The small bites eventually are going to become too much, and it's counterintuitive. It's hard to understand that that big creature, that big powerful creature, could actually be felled by fleas or by mosquitoes or whatever, but it can. And that's a really powerful point. Thank you for that, Jerry. 860-522-9842. How about that for an argument? I like it. Matthew in Bristol. Hey, Matt.
Hi, Todd. Yeah, so I was calling about the poem on the Statue of Liberty.
Okay.
I constantly hear it used as a talking point.
Oh, I know. It's so ridiculous. Who cares about a poem on the statue?
Yeah,
that's not a constitutional statement.
And that's my point. I don't think people really understand where the poem came from.
Where did it come from? Tell us.
It was part of a fundraising effort, I believe, to help get the podium for the Statue of Liberty to sit on, if I remember correctly.
It's the podium poem.
Yeah.
I like that. Anytime you can make a political point and use an alliteration, that's a good thing.
Yeah, so I just didn't think people, or not everyone, really realized that it's not legislation, it's not a decree, it's not something that the U.S. government came up with. It was one man's interpretation, one poet.
Yeah, one woman's, I think, yes.
Oh, yes, sure. I think you're right. But, yeah, no, that's all I called it to say, because I'm sick of hearing that used over and over again in a way that's just not appropriate.
No, thank you for making that point. It's an important one. Here's Ken Cuccinelli on the policy again.
They certainly are. Give me your tired and your poor who can stand on their own 2 feet and who will not become a public charge.
That's the new policy. We don't want people who are going to be on welfare to be the a new burden coming into the country. We don't need that. We need people ready to produce, because that's where we are. We've created a system that's unsustainable. Back to Jerry's analogy about small burdens accumulated in large numbers being that those small cuts, death by a thousand cuts, is that the expression? Can't give to everybody, especially if we're going to have a system that gives to everybody, that doesn't have expectations. So, yeah, let's say we can pick our favorite immigrants around the world, and I don't care about their skin color. I care about them, their culture. I want their culture to be one that has them prepared. And let's train the world that before you even apply, learn some English. So our urban schools aren't so burdened. 860-522-9842. Quick break. We'll take more calls on WTIC. Little immigrant song, eh? WTIC, good afternoon. Governor Lamont in on this, joined the list of Connecticut leaders opposing the Trump administration's latest move to restrict legal immigration. Lamont and Deirdre Gifford, the state commissioner of social services, issued a joint statement Tuesday objecting to a new public charge rule that would deny citizenship and permanent residency to some people who entered the United States legally and are seeking permanent status. The decision by the Trump administration would give preference to those who aren't requiring public money. What a beautiful thing that is. And here are the Democrats. They come running. The only thing they got upset about is when people from other countries aren't getting enough. This is what upsets Democrats. Lamont and Gifford said the change will cause vulnerable immigrant families to forego public services. Beautiful. That's what we need. We want the message to go out to the world. Go to America if you're ready. Go to America if you're ready to work and you are prepared to assimilate into the society. Don't go there to be another burden on urban schools that already can't educate. Don't go there to be another vulnerable person in the Democrats' poor, broken down cities. Another vulnerable person requiring services because we can't afford it, and we've obviously failed to provide adequate services in those cities controlled by Democrats already. Lamont calls it a cruel policy. I say it's the Democrats who are being cruel. 860-522-9842. And Paul in Litchfield. Hello there, Paul.
Good afternoon, sir. I believe you said a little bit earlier that you thought that at one point in our time we allowed millions of people to come to this country with no discernible skills or something akin to that. Did I hear that correctly?
I wasn't mentioning skills, I don't believe. I was saying that I'm sure there were times when we were allowing people to come in without much regard for whether they were coming legally or not. But the point I was making was there were times when we were desperate for people to come in here and work.
Not true.
And we've never had a time where we were desperate for people?
No, never. Simply because going back to the late 1800s with the first wave of immigrants coming in from Europe, mm-hmm. and ending sometime around 1960, sadly not with the Obama administration, as somebody once pointed out. Actually, it was 1965, some guy from Massachusetts.
Just make the point. Don't worry about the details. Don't get lost in the rabbit hole.
Okay, but up until that point, you came to this country as an immigrant. You had to have a sponsor. You had to have an American citizen, naturalized or, you know, native born, sponsor you to come from your country to our country. That sponsor was responsible to make sure that you had a job, that you were a productive member of society. Okay? And then in 1965, this Massachusetts
Don't go down that rabbit hole. Okay, so I
change the rule.
So thank you for correcting me. You're right. That is the story that is told about the past. And I know those were the rules, and I assume they were followed, but I don't know if they were followed. Thank you, Paul. 860-522-9842. Thank you for making that point. Jeff in Middletown. Hello.
Good afternoon, Todd. How are you?
You're not allowed to ask me that question. Anything else? But don't ask me how I am.
Fair enough.
Okay.
Just a different angle on this whole immigration thing.
Yes, sir.
If you stop and think about it, technology has changed the entire jobscape of this country so that we no longer have the number of manual labor jobs that would be required for unskilled people to just come in huge waves.
So I think everybody would agree we should welcome the people we need, right? If we need low-skilled labor, then let's them in. If we need high-skilled labor, let's them in. It seems to me what the left wants is just their voters to pack into their cities and make life more difficult there.
I agree with you. It's not just rational immigration. It needs to be rationed immigration.
Rationed.
What we need.
All right, that's a good point. I like your little twist on that language. Thank you, Jeff. 860-522-WTIC, Rick in Bloomfield. Hello, Richard.
Hello, Todd. Good afternoon. I have been listening, and as far as the policy on immigration goes, it's common sense that we wouldn't want people to come here that didn't have something to contribute. Just like if we had a team, you know, whoever gets on that team should be able to contribute.
Good analogy. You don't draft a punter if you've already got five of them.
Sure. And then as far as our politicians' goals go, it's the goal of them to get reelected.
Mm-hmm.
We have a lot of politicians. All they care about is getting reelected. And so, you know, to have the people that want to let anybody into this country and then give them a driver's license so they can vote, you know, that's probably getting closer to their agenda. And so as far as the politicians go, and I mean, geez, well, we had the Acorn scandal and we had the Obama phones. And
we have all kinds of immigration, fond memories on immigration, and I think the direction you're going is the right one. Clean it up, and let's make it professional and respectful of everybody's needs, not just the needs of the needy from around the world.